as I get started here, I just want to tell you that when I put this project for Patriot Renewable Fuels together, starting in 2004, going into production in 2008, exports never crossed my mind. Now, that wasn't an important part of it. A lot of what was important was we created a new market for corn. We created economic development. We created new jobs. And perhaps the most compelling thing that I heard in 2005 was when the president in his State of the Union address said we've got to decrease our dependence on foreign oil, and we've got to do things like increasing domestic and renewable fuels like biodiesel, ethanol made out of switchgrass, and wood chips and those kind of things. So I went into this project, and then that was where my heart and my background was. But it didn't take too long until we found out that we needed to look at some of the export markets for some of these things. When we went into production in 2008, of course, the banking crisis was what it was. Some of the ethanol industry was turning over within a month after we went into production. So we were looking at how we were going to get through some tough times and get into a method where we could survive. So we looked at some of the things we were doing, and we found out that there are some reasons why we need to be looking at ethanol. And I want to talk a little bit about distiller's grain. I want to talk a little bit about ethanol separately. But first, let me just say up front, I want to tell you why I think this is important. U.S. ethanol is the cheapest motor vehicle fuel in the world. It's needed, and it can be blended in any country for clean air. And it'll also be blended for a lower-cost fuel. U.S. distillers' grain also are a high-quality livestock feed that are needed to feed a growing world population in any country around the world. And then the U.S. ethanol industry can and will continue to grow and produce more than we can be used here in the United States. We're producing 14 billion gallons of ethanol. The EPA says it should be 13 billion gallons. What do we do with that extra million gallons? That's a lot of ethanol that we've got to dispose of, and that's not going to do nothing but bring our own prices down if we don't find an answer to that. The same thing is true with the distiller's grain. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but these worldwide markets must be developed. As producers, we have to take control of some of our own destiny. We just can't assume that this product is going to be taken off of the market, nor can we assume that all of our industry associations are going to do this job for us, whether it's ACE, RFA, Growth. No, they can't take all of that off of it for us. We've got to be working with the different organizations that can. We've got to figure out how to move it ourselves. We must develop these worldwide markets. It's not just two or three markets. It's not just Brazil. It's not just the United States. There's a lot of countries around the world that need our both our DDGs and our low-cost, clean-burning fuel. So there are some. There are just too many opponents out here that we have to deal with. Whether it's the politics, Corn Belt versus the non-Corn Belt legislators, the Republicans versus the Democrats, whether we're taking market share from big oil, you know, they're all out to get us. Grocery opponents, livestock producers. They may have changed their mind here the last month or two, as the prices have come down. But livestock and others are always going to be out there. Arguing about the why should we take more oil? Why should we increase the blends? All the things that we've been talking about here today. Secondly, we must develop worldwide markets in both of these to control our own destiny. And then the third point is that there are a number of organizations that are working for and with us to expand our markets. We can help these organizations, including the U.S. Grains Council, the USDA, the Commerce Department, and then our industry associations, ACE, RFA, and Growth, to expand these markets. But they can't do it by themselves. So let me highlight a few of the things that some of Patriot's experiences with distillers' grain first, and then I want to talk a little bit more about ethanol. Our production began, as I said, in 2008. And we soon learned that we're well located to produce to produce DDGs for export markets. We're about 30 miles east of Moline, Illinois, right on Interstate 80. We're about 2 hours west of the Joliet, Chicago terminals that take distillers' grain and put them on a train there, then take them to the West Coast, take them to the Asian markets. So we've taken advantage of that. With help from our marketer, which is CHS, and you're going to hear a little bit about from them here in a few minutes, we developed a very strong export focus. The result is that we have historically been near the top of the DDG markets when we compare using the benchmarking comparisons that we have access to. I should probably keep some of this secret just because it has been good. But as you're aware, domestic and worldwide markets for distillers' grain and for corn are changing drastically. And we haven't heard as much about that at this program as I think you're going to hear about in the next few months. As producers, we must find ways to further develop these markets so we can continue to grow. I think all of our plants today are finding ways that we can debottleneck our plants. You're all producing at the highest level you've ever produced at. The profitability has been as good as it's ever been. And all of that has been very positive. But we're at a point now that if we can't grow that market, then it's going to be really hard for us to continue to grow our production as a producer. So when we first thought about possible DDG exports, one of the things we did do was to attend the U.S. Grains Council meeting in Chicago to listen to and understand the markets, get familiar with some of the people that they'd invited over from some of these foreign countries to be able to learn more about distillers' grain. The Grains Council and CHS management encouraged us also when the Chinese asked us to register for DDG registration. They encouraged us to be in the first to do that, and I think if we weren't the first, we were one of the first to successfully register in China. As a result of that, virtually all of our distillers' grain have been shipped to Asian markets, not just China, but Asian markets, with a lot of them going to China for the last 5 years. We don't have the same livestock industry that some of you might have in some of the western Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska areas. But that's a very important market for us, and we had good access to it, and we've done well with it. As our sales to these markets increased, we had a lot of Chinese buyers that would come to the U.S., come to visit our plant, take a tour, and get to know us a little bit as part of the market development process. As we developed new processes like corn oil, we had to do some things to make sure that we weren't taking the pro-fat below an acceptable level. And so we didn't lose any of the markets for the distiller's grain that we had worked to cultivate. And last, a result of these efforts is that we have positively contributed just on the distiller's grain between $60 and $70 million per year to the U.S. Trade balance. That's something we never, ever thought about doing, but it's a benefit. In addition to developing these markets that we're real proud of. Patriot logistically is well located, as I mentioned, to the terminals in Joliet and Chicago, where a lot of the Burlington Northern or some of the other trains might originate to take these containers to the West Coast, put them on a ship, and take them to the Asian markets. To improve our loading times and efficiencies, we have developed a fast, reliable loadout process. We have two of these loaders, and we can load containers in someplace between, depending on the day, but if things are working well, we can load them in 7 to 10 minutes, including the inspection by the USDA on site. Last month, we expanded our container parking lot to facilitate drop and hook turnarounds by the trucking companies that bring the containers in here. They can drop the empties and pick up loaded containers without having to wait. Patriot has a contractor and a tractor trailer with a truck tractor that hooks up to the empties and loads them and parks them in the loaded container spaces, loader container line. And reaction to this extra service has been extremely positive here since we've put that process in place. As an independent, locally owned company, I've got to acknowledge that we would have had difficulty accessing some of these markets on our own. And as I mentioned, our marketer is CHS. They've played a major role. They're a global company with offices and qualified personnel around the globe. They helped us find and develop sales to China, Korea, Philippines, Malaysia, Thailand, and a number of the other Asian countries. In our first 5 years, Chinese markets for distillers' grain grew significantly, but that this market was better than we ever expected it to be. But as we all know, we haven't heard very much about it. Things change. All of a sudden, this year, the Chinese have taken a GMO issue, and they've started rejecting corn or limiting the amount of corn that they're taking. They carried that farther now, and they have stopped issuing import permits for the distillers' grain that they have been buying. And whether it's a good reason for them to reject and limit their imports of these processes, these products or not, what it's done is to throw the corn and the distillers' grain into a tailspin. The corn prices being down where they are now, and distiller's grain having dropped from $230-$240 a ton to under $100 a ton. I heard somebody speculate not too long ago that could it be 50, or should we be burning them? I think one of the presentations talked about the value that we might be able to get for fertilizer out of the distiller's grain. Well, that was some of the conversation we had when we first started putting this thing together. But we know now that that it is a good livestock feed, and we can develop these markets for it. In my opinion, the Chinese action is nothing but an excuse to shut off the imports and to give them an opportunity to depress the prices on a worldwide basis for these products, and to give them an opportunity to clean out their own inventory of poor quality, high-priced corn, and I think that they're very successful in achieving both of these objectives. So let me talk a minute about ethanol. On the ethanol side, we began exporting and shipping, and we shipped as many as 28 million gallons, or about 25% of our production, in 2011. That was when the European market was open, and some of you may have also been shipping to that, but a lot of you have been shipping to Canada and some of the other markets that are close proximity. The EU market did change. They put an anti-dumping charge on a number of plants, anti-subsidy charges, and then even though they found absolutely no reason to uphold those charges, they put a tariff on that essentially brought the exports to the EU back to zero. So we haven't had any market there, and 2012 didn't prove out to be the same active market that we had in 2011. But we started again last year, the fourth quarter of 2013, and we have actively been marketing ethanol to Brazil the last quarter of last year and the first half of this year. I see this as a strategically important part of our business for a number of reasons. First of all, we are facing the blend wall. We've talked about that for the last couple of years, and maybe even longer than that. We're concerned about the RFS2. Now, we can't get anybody to make a decision. Is it $13 billion? Is it $14 billion? Or what is it we're going to be able to sell? As an industry, we need to develop this world market for our ethanol business to decrease our vulnerability on big oil and fickle politicians. And a lot of our politicians are very loyal and very understanding of the need to be able to support the ethanol industry, support agriculture, support rural development, all of that kind of thing. You get outside of the Corn Belt and find out how many of them are really supportive of these things. So I think we need to take we need to understand that we're going to have a hard time controlling that, and we need to find a way to get around that particular issue. The U.S. market can be capped at $13 billion or $13.5 billion or whatever it is, but these other countries need that cheaper, cleaner source of fuel that I've already talked about. Not only that, but what we found is that the exports of ethanol can also be amongst your most profitable, depending on where you are. But it can be as profitable as anything else. We're not taking a hit to export to these countries. But I do think that if we can get any gallons of ethanol out of this country, it's going to help us to balance the supply and demand in this country. Even if they want to produce, and a number of the countries have indicated that they're going to be producing more ethanol, it's going to take a long time to develop that production and the facilities, and the demand and the inventories that we have here can help them to balance their demand. Most plants have a grandfathered RIN level that was issued when you went into production, and maybe you've been able to get that changed. Some of you, and it was indicated here previously that some plants have gone beyond that by showing that they can get a 20% efficiency in their electric and gas. And so maybe you've gotten beyond the grandfathered RINs, but if you haven't, You can grow up to that part, and then you have to buy RINs. Well, this is one way you can get around that, too, because RINs aren't needed for export markets. As I've said before, the U.S. ethanol can compete, and we can develop these world markets, but it takes a lot of work to do that. So if there's such a need, why haven't we, as individual plants, been doing more of this to develop that worldwide market? Well, again, I want to come back to the fact that we built these plants to decrease our dependence on foreign oil. And that, you know, I don't think that there's a one of you that doesn't include that in your conversations. We need to be able to find these markets outside of that. But a lot of our plants are perhaps not on a main line capable of accessing these foreign markets on a competitive basis. And some of the plants might not have the capacity to build unit trains that would make it most effective to get to some of those markets as well. And beyond that, a lot of us don't have expertise in developing foreign markets. What do we do to develop a foreign market? If we haven't had exposure to some of those opportunities, how do we actually gain access to those things? The marketers that we have are an important part of it, and you're going to hear from a couple of marketers here in just a couple minutes, but they do have access to foreign markets, and they do know how to develop the infrastructure and to get these products in there. So that's a really important part of it. Our industry associations, coupled with the U.S. Grains Council and USDA Commerce, they need us, though, to help open the doors to these markets and to establishing the infrastructure that's required. They also have a hard time doing some of those things on their own. Just a little bit about Patriot's ethanol exports. Since we've been in production, our marketers have helped us to, and I gave you some numbers before, but our export markets account for 8 to 10% of our total production. And we want to see that increase for the reasons that I've already mentioned. I would say that logistics are important. We are on the Iowa Interstate Railroad, which is a short line railroad that has access to all of the majors, the CSX, the Norfolk Southern, and they can come to the west too, but a lot of your plants are farther. They may have some benefit. So we focused on the ones that would go either to the East Coast or the Gulf for the export markets. We can build 80 to 100 car unit trains, and one thing that we have done also that if you're going to be active in the export market, we've added additional sieve bottles so we can produce the drier export spec and not have to slow down the production of our plant. So that's been an important part of it, and some of you may have done that, or if you want to actively participate in that, that might be something you'd want to consider. So where are the export markets? This doesn't show the export markets. This shows where the production is. I'm not going to take the time to show you there will be one that shows a little bit about where it's going to, too. But of the total world market, you see these numbers some other places, too, we've produced 23 billion gallons of ethanol in 2013, of which 13 billion of that was here in the U.S. People talk about how good the Brazilian ethanol is, and it is. It's great. But they produce about 6.2 billion gallons. The European market, which was opened up, and we were exporting a fair amount to Europe, and they were using it. That's only 1.3 billion. China is just getting a good start, but they probably need more ethanol than anybody else right now, just to clean up the cities and the smog that they have in that country. For those of you that have been there. India is growing some. They're committed, but they're about a half a billion, just a little over half a billion. And Canada's using a lot, but they produce only about half a billion themselves. And the rest of the world, there's only 727 million gallons of ethanol produced in the rest of the world, bringing that to 23 million. So those are... those are some of the places that it's coming from, but there's some of the places that it's being used. But when you look at the actual markets for this, those of you that are shipping ethanol to Canada, that is the biggest market in 2013, according to this this source. The Philippines and Brazil each received about 8% of our exports this last year. We are looking at Brazilian exports this week. I'm not sure if we've shipped anything to Brazil up to this point, but we have done a lot to the Philippines. I'm talking about Philippines. We have shipped a lot to Brazil over the last 2 or 3 years. The United Arab Emirates surprisingly takes more ethanol than you might expect. I'm not exactly sure where all that's coming from, but 6%. Mexico and Peru each account for 5%, and then there's 15 other countries that also imported ethanol from the U.S. They absorbed about 16% of our exports. So Canada is really important. Brazil will continue to be important as well, and the Philippines and some of the others will be grown additionally. Okay, so I said that we need to be involved, and. These industry associations are trying to help us. We need to help them. I know that last year there were a couple of producers that sent people to Brazil. We sent one to Brazil, and as a result, it helped substantially. But here's some trips that are coming up that are being coordinated between RFA, Growth, the U.S. Grains Council, the U.S. Commerce Department, and probably some others. There's one to Japan, and they're going to try to hit Japan and Korea in 3 days between Saturday, September 13th, and Wednesday or Thursday, September 18th. If you've got a little bit of time and you've got a passport and you want to promote your ethanol, then this one would be a really good one to get on. I think they've got one or possibly two producers, but the rest of the people that they've got are people from those other organizations, and it really helps to have a face with the trip. In Latin America, there's one coming up in November 3rd to 11th. I think that's Colombia and Panama. They're also looking for volunteers to help with that one. Southeast Asia, there's. That's coming up November 30th to December 13th. I think that's Vietnam, the Philippines, and Malaysia. There might be someplace else, but that's a trip that's coming up. They need some help on that one as well. There's a China mission that's to follow up on in early 2015. Then there's one that's domestic here that if you haven't had exposure to it, I think I'd highly encourage you to. There's a RFA and a U.S. Grains Council meeting. And this one will be focused. Most of the Grains Council meetings up to this point have been focused on distillers grain, along with the other corn or whatever they might be promoting. In this case, they've agreed to help open up and promote ethanol as well. And that one is going to be held in Seattle, October 20th to 22nd. So if you've got the time and any interest at all in helping us to take control of our own destiny and help formulate these markets, these would all be really good trips to take advantage of. If you want contact information, I've got one name there, but contact me. Brian knows all of these people as well, and we'd be glad to help set that up. Back in November, we'd gone for the year 2012. I said we didn't export, and there wasn't much exported by the U.S. In 2012. But 2013, these things started to open up. So our commodity manager, Judd Holding, and he's the second from. Okay. Anyway, Judd Holding, who's the second from the right, traveled to Brazil on a similar mission, the ones I just talked about. And as a result of that trip, we have shipped nearly 18 million gallons to Recife, Brazil, which is the northeastern part of Brazil. Why would Brazil need ethanol? It's because they can't get ethanol from where they're producing it to the places that they need it. And we can get it to Recife faster and easier, apparently, than they can get it from the other parts of Brazil. So that's been a really good market the last half of last year and the first half of this year. Ed Hubbard from the RFA helped organize the trip. He's the tall one in that picture. And prior to that, I know that there were some of the other plants here that had participated in these Grain Council meetings. But producers do make a difference. And I know that during that trip, that CHS also has a representative in Brazil. And they met with us, and that was a way of kind of putting some things together, and that's really worked out really well. So I'd encourage you to do that. So in conclusion, let me go back to some of the things that I've tried to highlight here. To be proactive is the key to surfacing export opportunities. Strong growth in export and ethanol exports are forecast for 2015, but we have to work hard to do it. RFA, U.S. Grains Council meeting in Seattle, October 20th to 22nd. Important parts, important meetings. And I think my final points here are the ones that I tried to open with. We can't depend on the U.S. distiller's grain. We can't depend on the U.S. market or the Chinese market to support our industry, to the two primary products in our industry. We've got to develop a world-wide market for both of these things, and we're going to be a lot better off if we can actually get those things expanded. And the last point is, I've said it numerous times, and I want to reemphasize it, but you can help expand this trade by working with some of these organizations to do it, and I would strongly encourage you to do it. So with that, I thank you for the time and opportunity to express some of these things. And I look forward to solving some of our problems through those initiatives. Thank you.
Excellent job, Gene. Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Clayton Haupt with CHS North America. He's a senior merchandiser for them. As Gene referenced, Patriot works with CHS both on the ethanol side and